If you're feeling lonely, you're not alone by any means. Loneliness is on the rise in America, and it's now reaching epidemic proportions. Surveys of more than 20,000 American adults revealed nearly half of the respondents regularly feel lonely. Former Surgeon General Vivek Murthy said emotional well-being and loneliness is a big public health concern.
It turns out that loneliness is associated with a reduction in your lifespan that is as severe as the reduction in lifespan that you see with smoking 15 cigarettes a day. It's greater than the impact on mortality of obesity.
We're talking about the takeaways from the recent Cigna study on loneliness, how we can feel better. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Let's bring in UW health psychologist Shyla Mergain. Some of her clinical interventions include cognitive behavioral therapy for health and psychological issues, relaxation training, mindfulness, and cognitive therapy to reduce stress. Shyla, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me. Good morning, Kate.
Good morning. So in this Cygnus survey, nearly 50% of the participants said they are feeling lonely, they're feeling left out at some point. And the former Surgeon General is calling this a health epidemic. Why is loneliness a health risk?
It's certainly something that I see in my work as a psychologist. And many patients come to me saying, I feel lonely and it hurts. And we find that the impact of loneliness can look similar to feeling physical pain in the body. Emotionally, it can cause significant distress. We think that social support is really a protective factor against a variety of conditions like depression, anxiety. When we're socially connected with positive sources, we tend to live healthier, happier lives. And so loneliness and social connection are really things that we need to attend to in terms of promoting well-being. There was an interesting study in the animal world where they looked at the same stressor that when given to an animal who is alone, increased cortisol, an indicator of stress, by 50%. And there was not that increase in cortisol when the animal is surrounded by familiar companions. So we find that when we are lonely, we don't tend to handle stress as well, and it can cause inflammation and be a contributor to chronic disease.
Well, the former Surgeon General saying that it reducing lifespan, the equivalent of 15 cigarettes a day. So there are significant physical effects here on the body. What are some of the physical implications, the physical effects when we're lonely?
That is such a shocking study, isn't it? It was based on a meta-analysis of 70 studies that loneliness is comparable to well-established risk factors for mortality like obesity, substance abuse, mental health, and smoking. And we often prescribe stop smoking, you know, lose weight, decrease substance use, but we don't necessarily prescribe get socially connected. So we know that there are higher risks of coronary heart disease and stroke, greater risks of depression, anxiety, and dementia. And even it impacts our cortical functioning, that there are lower levels of creativity and decision-making and reasoning when we get isolated. And so it's something to really put in the forefront of our mind of how are we building, strengthening, maintaining social connection. And we see, psychologists have seen this not just recently, but it's been an kind of increasing trend, an alarming trend in our culture.
But how do you measure loneliness? How do you put, how do you quantify it and say, yes, this is clinically diagnosed, and yes, we can see it, we can measure it, and make it real?
The recent research from the Cigna study was based on a self-report questionnaire, the UCLA Loneliness Scale. It's frequently used in research, but community psychologists have also looked at social networks and how often people are involved in community organizations like your local PTA or your community garden. And we found since the 1980s, 1990s, there's been a decreased participation in some of those social networks where we typically get some of that connectedness needs met.
We're talking with Shyla Mergane. She is a psychologist at UW Health. We're looking at a new survey out this month from Cigna that found loneliness is very widespread in America. You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Are you lonely? Is it something new in your life, or have you always felt this way? Do you feel like people don't know you well? How do you feel socially isolated, and what do you do about it? 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Shyla, for some, there's this fear that opening up about being lonely may lead to them being perceived differently by the people around them. How do we view loneliness as a society?
I think there's a lot of discomfort around it, and that's why studies like this, although quite alarming, can actually be liberating, that we realize it's the norm, or that it's a typical pattern that at some point in our life we're probably going to go through a bout of loneliness. We just don't want it to be chronic. And just by identifying it and being able to share it with somebody that you're close with can build that sense of connectedness, because it's about being around people, but it's more so being feeling that sense of intimacy and closeness. I often hear people say, you know, the loneliest time is when I'm with my spouse and we're not getting along, or I'm in a group of friends and I feel like they don't get me, or we're certainly seeing in the workplace increasing rates of loneliness at work, at a place we spend most of our time. And people say, Shyla, you know, I leave work and people don't know what's going on. You know, they didn't ask me about my weekend. They don't have a sense of what I value. And I do my work, but I leave feeling fairly empty. So it's about attending to our connections, but also really knowing how to foster that kind of intimacy that is healing and really restoring us back to our best version of ourselves.
Going back to the workplace, loneliness certainly can go beyond our personal lives and impact the majority of the place we spend our day, you know, at least 8 hours, perhaps more. How does loneliness impact us in the workplace specifically?
And a variety of reasons. Studies have been showing that is an area where people are at risk for getting isolated. Many people are experiencing work, although enjoyable, to be a place where there's too much to do in too short of a period of time, or more and more is put on their plate and they're expected to do two or three jobs. And you think about a typical workday and all that comes at you, you're just trying to keep up. And if you don't necessarily have half an hour to sit around the water cooler checking in about the weekend. A good friend of mine was on sabbatical in Ireland at a university, and every day the faculty had tea time at 10 a.m., from 10 to 10:30, and people took it. That was really protected time, and that was considered a part, a really valuable part of their workday. And she said it was amazing to see the level of closeness and camaraderie that happened just in that half an hour where people put down their work and just sat talking. Here in the U.S., you know, that would be considered
wasteful.
Mm-hmm. And it's unfortunate that companies aren't valuing those social connections, because we do find when employees do feel that sense of support in the workplace, as I was saying earlier, they're more creative, innovative, productive, efficient, happier. There's more innovation, you know, kind of work being done. So it's something, you know, companies, if they can find ways to value it, can be very helpful.
But what is a way to take a first step in forging a connection at work? If you haven't done that before, it might feel awkward.
It can, yeah. Taking the first step of bridging a conversation to more intimacy, part of how we connect is in sharing things that are real and being vulnerable. So it may be disclosing just a small thing to somebody in the workplace that feels safe, something that's you know, authentic about what you might be going through, a struggle, a challenge, just a small step. And then you can also inquire about the other person as well, something that, you know, that might relate to their personal life or something that, that you know that they're looking forward to even.
We're talking with Shyla Mergane. She is a psychologist with UW Health, talking about this new Cigna study out this month that showed that fewer than 55% of Americans feel they engage in meaningful social interactions every day, real conversations, heart-to-hearts, even leisure conversations with friends. They are more rare than we think. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you lonely? Is something new to your life? Or have you always felt this way? Do you feel like people don't know you that well? And how does that affect your interactions? You can call in. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up the conversation with tips we can put into use. That's coming up after this news update. Loneliness knows no boundaries. The new Cigna survey out this month shows that loneliness is not connected to social class, not connected to race or gender. No known demographics offer any protection from loneliness. Here's actor Dwayne Johnson, also known as The Rock, opening up about struggling with his own mental health and battling depression.
You feel like you're alone, and you feel like it's only you, and you're in your bubble, and I wish I had someone at that time who could just pull me aside and, hey, it's going to be okay.
We're looking at the data, possible solutions with UW Health psychologist Shyla Mergane. It's The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Based on the survey, young people bear the heaviest burden when it comes to loneliness. Are you or your child or grandchild lonely? Do you think loneliness varies by age, or is it a shared experience? Does your workplace address loneliness? You have a line at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Let's go to Jerry joining us from Glendale. Good morning, Jerry.
Good morning. Some time ago, I was listening to an interview on the BBC with a British psychologist, and she talked about a study that she had been involved in that showed that young people between 18 and 25 had shown a marked increase in loneliness, not depression, but loneliness. And she was theorizing that one of the main contributions to that spike in loneliness had to do with the reliance that young people have on communicating electronically rather than communicating person to person. So she was making some link between the importance of human-to-human interaction around loneliness, and I'd like to have your guest comment on that theory.
Jerry, thanks. Shyla, what about Generation Z and social media?
Thanks so much, Jerry. I think you bring up a really interesting point, and the Cigna study showed similarly that it's Generation Z, those people born between the mid-1990s and the early 2000s, and the millennials that experience higher rates of loneliness, and they're more lonely than the older generations. And certainly there are a lot of factors that go into that, but I think you touch on an important point that all our technology, although we can in a nanosecond connect with anyone in our social network, sometimes that can, number one, leave us feeling more lonely. For example, if you're going on a social media site and just scrolling, there can be social comparison, feeling left out. Certainly with youth, there can be some bullying, some relational aggression that can happen that can leave young people feeling disconnected and discouraged. But I also, versus sometimes social media can be a positive. You know, if you're using it to reach out and to connect with people and share what's going on in a meaningful way, that can actually boost that sense of connectedness. But I also think with the younger generation, since they have used technology since, you know, since probably the majority of their life, sometimes it can come at a cost that they haven't necessarily really learn some of those interpersonal skills. You know, I've certainly seen, I'm sure you have, Jerry, you're maybe at the mall and you see a bunch of youth hanging out and they're all on their phones versus...
No eye contact. Right. Only eye contact with the phone.
Right. And I'm sure, you know, although that's very fun and they're doing Snapchats, I've seen in some of the young people that I work with, some of the conflict resolution, some of the kinds of build closeness, that it's really that sense of being present with one another, and that sometimes can be missing, some of that, you know, free play or free time where you're just exploring and connecting and sharing. That comes from uninterrupted time. And I do like to share, there was an iPhone study that was done about a year ago, and they showed just having the mere presence of a smartphone, even if it's turned off and upside down, just having the mere presence of a phone when you're connecting with somebody, when you're just talking with somebody, that mere presence impacts how connected you feel, that people found that reported less sense of closeness and connection just by the mere phone. And I'm sure we can all relate to that, you know, you're hanging out with somebody and the phone's there and you wonder, oh, are they going to interrupt our train of thought to answer that text? And when that person does take that text or the phone call, you know, you often feel less heard, less understood, less appreciated, less supported.
Shiloh, where does loneliness meet depression? Like, what is the difference?
They can co-occur. Depression is a clinical diagnosis that's given when people feel down or loss of interest or pleasure in things for most of the day, nearly every day, for at least 2 weeks. And when people do start to get depressed, one of the other factors is that they begin to isolate. They begin to feel disconnected or feel different than others. And so it can be a trigger for pulling away and then starting to feel lonely. And it can create a vicious cycle, because if you feel down and lonely, then when you are out in the world or trying to connect with people, I think it can lead you to feel like I'm not understood, or people don't know what's going on, or I'm just having a mask on and people don't really see beneath that. So I would say depression can lead to loneliness. And certainly we find, especially for women, that one of the best protective factors against depression is social connectedness. So, and for men too, but especially for women, if you have a close confidant or a group of friends, it's a great thing to help decrease the risk of going into depression or lower mood.
Let's go to Chris now, joining us from Burlington. Hi, Chris.
Hi. Good morning. I'm a truck driver, and so I experience loneliness on a daily basis, but it's sometimes it's by choice, I have to admit, but it certainly is a very important thing nowadays, and I appreciate the show. That clip from The Rock really struck me, because I could just, I got the visual of this big hunking strong guy trying to get himself in his bubble and trying to be able to be vulnerable. I guess it was a while ago, was it Bree Benson who did that TED talk on vulnerability? That she's an author, she's got a lot of good books. I find, for me, and I just was investigating this yesterday, was that I'm trying to figure out, well, am I too empathetic? Is it a problem? Is it that I'm, you know, not able to, like, detach myself at some point and be able to not try to carry on, you know, take in and absorb other people's situations? And so I find myself putting up shields a lot sometimes. And so I'll get vulnerable, I'll open up, and then I go through these cycles of kind of like just, you know, trying to go out there and I, even as a single guy, going out there and doing stuff on my own and opening myself up and then retreating back and kind of like, you know, soothing myself and trying to, you know, keep from it wears me out. It just kind of wears me out. And I'm wondering what the author thought about that, or the guest thought about that.
Well, Chris, thank you so much for calling in with that and opening up to this conversation.
Thanks so much, Chris. And I know that a lot of callers are relating to your experience. And when I heard the quote from The Rock 2, I just thought, how fantastic, this strong guy, movie star, sharing something that we can all relate to. And, you know, number one, I think part of why we as a society are experiencing more loneliness is more people are living alone, you know, or single living alone than past generations. And you mentioned being a truck driver, that a lot of workplaces are going to telecommuting or working from home. And so, you know, all those things can also lead us to not having some of that social connectedness. So I'd say two things. You know, first, hearing somebody like The Rock, I think saying that he's lonely takes some of the shame out of it, that it feels less personal, like there's something wrong with me. I think, once again, that downward spiral that can happen with loneliness, where we're isolated, we're struggling, but people don't see it. We have that shield up, that guard up, and we don't know how to deal with it. We have these distressing emotions or maybe negative thoughts, and we're not taught necessarily as a society of how to deal with some of those struggles. And being lonely resilient or shame resilient, I think, is related to some of that work you're mentioning around vulnerability. And so first, you know, you mentioned kind of soothing yourself, and that can be done by just normalizing it, not catastrophizing, saying, you know, this is a tough moment, but it's just one moment, and then figuring out, how do I reach out, break out of that shell, and who's safe? Not everyone is. But just merely, you know, your courageous act of even just sharing what you did, I mean, mm-hmm. I think, you know, if we can find people we can share, gosh, I'm feeling really lonely, or hey, can we just schedule some time to take a walk or grab a cup of coffee and I can share a little bit? And sometimes just by putting words to it, it really lightens the load, and we feel like other people are carrying that concern with us, and we feel kind of back connected with that common humanity.
And it's interesting that Chris points out to him it ebbs and flows. Like, you know, he clams up, he opens up, he shelters, puts up shields again, opens up. So there's all this flux. It's a moving thing, this loneliness.
Absolutely. I was thinking of in marriage research, they talk about how you think, oh, happy couples are connected all the time. And actually we find happy couples actually experience a lot of disconnection. You know, and even in close friendships or workplaces, that it's kind of like an accordion or a kind of a tie that comes in and out. And so normalizing those times of, hey, disconnection, and there can be kind of a retreat back into yourself, but then not staying stuck there.
Let's go to Daryl now, joining us from Couderay. Hi, Daryl.
Good morning. Thank you for the program.
Sure.
I wonder if people feel lonely because they have misplace their faith, actually their faith in themselves, so they have low confidence in being freely creative. If people believed in their creativity by creating something with either their hands or their mind, as with poets and other writers, so in this way lonely time would be less, their lives could become not as lonely because they would be using that time spent being lonely, being more productive and confident in oneself.
So Daryl is saying having a purpose and going after something, does that have an impact?
Daryl, that's a really interesting point you bring up, that sometimes we feel like, oh, I just have to be around people 24/7, you know, and it's a way of almost escaping ourselves. And I think that can lead us to being too focused externally on the outside world, and can leave us vulnerable to getting off kilter. If somebody's rude or mean or is having a bad day, we can lose our center. And I often use the analogy of, you know, we turn inward to become like a boat that's firmly anchored. And if we can anchor ourselves within, you know, it could be a faith or creativity or just our values, then when heavy winds come or we're having conflict with somebody, we don't topple over. And yes, creativity, probably we would, our world would be missing some of the great works of art and poetry and music if people didn't have those bouts of isolation. And we can use those times to disconnect and reconnect back to what's most important. And maybe we can think about it more as a mini retreat.
Yeah. What about age and loneliness? Because we have been hearing through the Cigna study that the 18 to 22-year-olds are especially lonely, but we also know that the older generations, and as Wisconsin ages, we have elderly people here more and more each day who perhaps also feel quite lonely and disconnected in their world. So what about older generations?
Absolutely. As baby boomers are aging, spouses can die or friends can move away to a different retirement community, or perhaps you need to shift where you're living. So some of those social networks you may have had for years start to change. I know I had one person I was working with, and she said, every year I'm losing somebody, and there's kind of this kind of constant state of grief that she was in. So I always say it's so important to continue to make friends across the lifespan. That, you know, it's sometimes something that's a little easier when we're younger because of school or because of some of our social interactions or activities. But equally, when, you know, I think people are vulnerable when they retire and leave the workplace where they're getting a lot of their social needs. So to continue to repurpose, to continue to find places where you can connect with like-minded people. And, you know, when in doubt, get a pet if you're able to. You know, pets can really sometimes be, you know, they say dogs are man's best friend for a reason.
Another thing that people often really find disconnect with is when their children move away to a different state, to a different country, and they are left with the text messages, perhaps the FaceTime, the phone calls. How does that void impact an older adult?
Absolutely. You know, empty nesters. There's a huge void or hole that's left. And there can be that longing to connect with the child, but the child's flying free, living his or her life and kind of busy. So you're stuck with maybe a text few times a week, or if you're lucky, a phone call once a week. And I think there's, again, this opportunity to repurpose, refocus back on yourself within the parenting years. Well, I always say you're never, you know, done with parenting, but at least the intensive parenting years are over. There's all this freed up energy. And couples often find that they, you know, it brings them back to why they married to begin with, or even just finding new hobbies or activities that you can do.
Some other things that we can do, hobbies, activities, if we're going to take a step today to really head on look at our loneliness in our lives, what can people do?
I would first prioritize it. You know, we often say go to the gym and exercise or manage your stress or eat your veggies and fruit. But equally, what are you doing to attend to your social network? And is there a way to regularly build in being proactive? You know, are you reaching out to people? When you are connected, are you present? You know, do you have your phone off? Are you sharing things that are meaningful and real, even a little bit? And then when people are sharing, how do you respond? Can you be present in a courageous way and create some space? Or do you jump in with advice giving right away that maybe the person doesn't need? And there's a great line of research on how to quickly form friends. And it was based on a fast friends protocol that's a list of, I think, 36 questions, and they're free online. Huh. So when in doubt, you can just do a web search for fast friends protocol, and you'll see those questions, and you might even try them out with somebody you want to get to know better.
We're talking with UW health psychologist Shyla Mergain. You can ask questions, share your experiences about loneliness. 800-642-1234. Do you feel socially isolated? How does that impact your life? What tips might you share that could help others through this? You can call in at 800-642-1234. Post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll get back to the conversation after a news update on the Ideas Network. When most people think of public health crises, they think of the flu or other physical diseases or outbreaks. This former Surgeon General Vivek Murthy treats loneliness like a public health crisis, and he says that there are a lot of people feeling this way.
Number one is to recognize that if you are feeling lonely, you are not the only one. There are many people out there who are feeling lonely. Number two, if you're feeling lonely, that it does not mean that there is something fundamentally wrong with you and that you're not worthy of friendship or being loved. And finally, if you are not feeling lonely, it's important to recognize there very likely are people around you who are.
The healthcare company Cigna is testing how to incorporate mental wellness into medical visits at doctors' offices in Denver, New Jersey, and Virginia, and it plans to expand the pilot to 10 offices by the end of the year. We're talking about how to make loneliness more out in the open here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Shyla Mergain is a psychologist with UW Health, and she stays with us. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Does your workplace help address loneliness? Have your kids moved away and now you FaceTime to stay connected? How is technology working with these feelings? And what about pets? You can call in or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let's go to Sarah now, joining us from Menominee. Hi, Sarah. Hi. Hi, go ahead.
I just want to comment that we live 15 miles from town and a wildlife refuge, so we're very rural and isolated, and we have fought loneliness by joining our community garden, and we have rescued 5 dogs. Our life is full and happy and not lonely anymore.
So even though you're far removed in a rural area where it seems quite isolating, you have a lot of life around you.
Oh, we definitely do. We definitely do.
Sarah, thank you so much for that. Shyla, what do you make of that? In rural areas, you can feel not so isolated at all.
Absolutely. Thanks for that, Sarah. And I think it really highlights that it doesn't, you know, it's good news. It doesn't take much to get connected. And a small thing like joining a community garden can make a difference and make you feel part of the larger whole of your community.
And rescuing dogs, how does pets fit into loneliness?
Pets, you think about the unconditional love that an animal provides, that the pet is, you know, happy when you arrive home, and if you've had a bad day, will be there to comfort you. And I think pets also, like dogs, get you out walking, maybe at a dog park or in your neighborhood, so you're more likely to interact with others. I know I'm getting a puppy in a little over a week. I'm very excited about it. But it can be so helpful to people, especially if you're living alone, to have something to come home to.
And a pet also needs care, regular care, and you have things to do with that pet. That pet has to go outside. It needs walks. It needs attention.
Absolutely. It gets you outside of yourself instead of brewing and stewing in that sense of isolation. It does, you know, get you to focus on something other than you and build some of that positive emotion of playing and caring for that pet.
Let's go to Darren now in Green Bay with thoughts. Darren, hi.
Yeah, hi. Good morning. I wanted to say, kind of a lot like your previous caller, I've kind of joined a local group, but another one of your callers, actually, I'm on the road a lot. I'm not a truck driver, but I am gone from home a lot. So, you know, loneliness is really something for me to try to contend with. As a hobbyist, I'm a woodworker, and I joined a local woodworking group. We only meet once a month, and probably the youngest person in the group by 20 years, but I still find it really enjoyable to get out and find and talk about, you know, talk with people with common interests, and then also, like the previous caller, we rescued a dog, and, you know, we walked around the neighborhood. I've met friends then throughout the neighborhood, and that's been some good, I guess, not necessarily coping mechanisms, but ways for me to avoid loneliness.
So Darren's found a number of solutions there.
Absolutely. And Darren, you highlight that sometimes friendships can be formed with people who are older or younger and just staying open. And if we can find a new hobby we want to cultivate, there are lots of opportunities for connection, asking advice, getting feedback, sharing, working together, and woodworking and finding a woodworking guild is another great example of how to foster that sense of social support.
Thank you so much for that call, Darren. Let's go to Bill now, joining us from Wanakee. Hi, Bill.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I have a question about the differences between friend circles of husbands and wives specifically, and I'm going to explain my situation, but I've noticed me and my guy friends have noticed we're all married, and this is the same situation that all of us experienced, and it's the same situation my parents had too, is that I, the husband, have a social circle, and I have all my friends, and my friends all have wives, and all of our wives, they don't really seem to have social circles as far as we can tell. They're friends with our wives, and when I get together with my friends, we all get together and they talk to each other, but they never get together on their own, and I've never seen my wife go out with a friend before. I go out with my friends at least once every couple weeks. I don't know. I can't make friends for her. I don't know how to fix that. I don't know if it needs to be fixed. But I noticed that it's something that several of my peers are experiencing. And also, my mom is a widow now, and she's been alone for 10 years, and she has no friends. She's the loneliest person I know, alone in that house, because she never had any friends. My dad's gone, and now she doesn't see anybody anymore. Mm. I don't know if that's a known phenomenon. I'm just wondering about it, I guess.
Good questions there. Yeah.
And Bill, you're highlighting in married couples one partner can be more extroverted and be the driver of the social life. And sometimes it comes down to personality type. Somebody may be more extroverted, which means that they recharge around other people and need that regular social contact. And if they don't have it, feeling more lonely, where somebody who's more introverted really needs alone time and downtime, and that's how they recharge and actually can find being around people all the time somewhat draining. I would look to, it sounds like, Bill, you are the organizer of getting together with the buddies and the wives come together, and it sounds like the focus is on finding those shared activities or outings that make sure you're getting what you need from that. In terms of your wife and mother, I would again look at kind of what impact does it have with your mother. I know sometimes people really enjoy getting involved in a senior center or senior classes, or even moving to a different kind of retirement community where there are regular activities that they can join in, whether it's an exercise class or a church group or even learning a new craft like sewing. So trying to encourage her. But I do find in couples where one partner is more extroverted and the other is introverted, it's usually the extrovert that's leading the kind of the social initiative.
And is that okay? Is it okay to have those two different dynamics at work?
Oftentimes it can work really well if the couple recognizes that those are just some individual differences. And often, you know, what those differences attract us and how to complement one another. And I think if we married somebody exactly like us, it would get kind of boring. So the partner who's more introverted will probably have other strengths that they'll bring to that partnership and team. It just may not be the initiating socially.
We have a question. Phyllis called in to say she's elderly who lived a full, busy life, but now she believes she's dying from loneliness. Could you address loneliness in elderly people, and would assisted living help with this?
Phyllis, thanks for the call, and I'm sorry to hear that it's been a struggle. And you know, I think you're highlighting how loneliness feels painful. You know, similar as I was mentioning to physical pain, emotional loneliness that experience can feel similar. So I think potentially assisted living, but I go back to, you know, you're not alone. A lot of people, as they're aging and retiring and living alone and maybe having lost a spouse or some best friends, start to feel like, oh, you know, my whole social network is no longer there. So I would say pick one thing. You know, it can be a small step. Pick one activity, one hobby, one way of being around other people. And especially if it's a hobby, it's something you'll enjoy doing. You'll be around other people and conversation will happen naturally. But often just taking one step in the direction of social connectedness, that kind of gets the ball moving, so to speak.
Suzelle on Facebook says, what about faith communities as an antidote to loneliness? It works for me, Suzelle says.
Absolutely. You know, based on your particular faith, joining a synagogue or church or meditation community, there are some studies that show that people who regularly attend some sort of religious or spiritual community or service actually are healthier and even can live longer, because I think that can meet so many of our social needs. And many people find, you know, if they feel alone but then go to some spiritual or religious service, then they feel like they're connected with something larger than themselves, a force or source, or some people call it God, that cares about them. Sometimes that also can help alleviate some of the pain of not having much regular interaction with people.
So as awareness continues to increase and we hear more and more about loneliness, are you hopeful we can improve our understanding of loneliness and come at it differently as a society?
Absolutely. I know at UW Health and across the country in our VA administration, health organizations, they're looking at social connectedness as a health indicator and asking about it in medical appointments. So I think doctors are starting to put it on the map at places like UW Health or different VAs across the country. So identifying it, and I think the awareness then helps people be proactive in fostering that sense of connectedness.
And when seeing a health provider for a checkup, for instance, are there questions that are being asked that can figure out whether there's loneliness going on?
And yes, places like in some clinics at UW Health, they're asking, who are you closest with? Who do you turn to for support? When things get difficult, who can you call? And then brainstorming, if you're not coming up with answers, what's one thing you can do to start to work towards that? And I think that's a takeaway for listeners today is, you know, pay attention to your social connections and keep taking regular action.
Well, Shyla, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me here.
Shyla Mergane is a psychologist with UW Health. She joined us to consider the challenges loneliness presents for our society and for our personal health. This hour of the morning show was produced by Brianne Chasso, Sarah Hopeful, and the Ideas Network director, Cheryl Gasser. Michael Derringer provided technical direction. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and this conversation comes to you on the Ideas Network.